Stories of Journey to the West, Chapter 13.
You know that feeling when you're really pushing towards something? Maybe scaling a steep learning curve or just navigating a big life change?
Yeah.
And then bam, out of absolutely nowhere, something completely weird, totally unexpected, just throws you completely off course.
Uh-huh. Definitely know that feeling.
Well, that kind of sudden detour, that's sort of what we're diving into today.
Exactly. We've got a Tang Dynasty monk, Xuanzang. It mostly calls him Sanzang. Yeah. His mission is huge. Journey west to what they saw as the Buddhist paradise and bring back sacred scriptures. Our story kicks off in 639 AD. He's leaving Chang'an, the capital. A massive deal for that time.
Okay, so this wasn't him just slipping out the back door.
Not at all.
The text really paints a picture, right? A big ceremonial send-off from Chang'an. We're talking like the Tang King, loads of officials escorting him out of the city.
Yeah, it really drives home how important this mission was seen right from the very start. This wasn't just some personal quest. It had, you know, serious imperial weight behind it.
Right, serious backing.
Precisely. And his first big stop is this place called the Feynman Temple.
Feynman Temple.
And he gets this incredibly warm welcome. The abbot, maybe 500 monks.
Yeah.
They all greet him.
Wow, 500 monks.
Yeah. And that evening, they sit down and talk. And it's interesting, you know, the concerns these monks bring up.
What kinds of things?
Well, the sheer distance, obviously, but also the terrain, dangerous mountains, cliffs, and wild animals, even like these almost mythical demons they mention.
Surreal dangers and maybe imagined ones too.
Exactly. It gives you a real sense of the fear factor involved in traveling that far west back then.
Yeah, you can almost feel their anxiety. But Sanzang's response, it's pretty powerful, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't launch into a big speech or debate. He just silently points to his heart and nods.
Mm-hmm.
And then explains this idea he realized at the Temple of Transformation.
Okay, let's dig into that. He talks about the mind, how things arise and cease with the mind.
Yes. The arising of the mind leads to the arising of all phenomena. And the cessation of mind leads to the cessation of all phenomena. That's the gist.
So it's this deep inner belief driving him, a core Buddhist idea that reality is shaped internally.
Essentially, yes. It suggests his strength wasn't just physical, it was mental, philosophical. He believed his inner resolve could handle the external world.
That's a powerful foundation for such a massive undertaking. It wasn't just wanderlust.
Not at all.
It's this really strong, like, nonverbal statement.
Mm.
Shows his inner conviction, you know?
It really does. It makes you think about how deep his faith must have been to just gesture like that.
And when they ask him, you know, what does that mean? His answer really lays out his commitment. He talks about this powerful vow he made back at the Huaxing Temple.
A vow?
Yeah, a vow that basically forces him, compels him to see this through. He's super clear about his aims. Get to the Western Heaven, get the scriptures, spread Buddhist teachings,
mm-hmm.
and also, interestingly, ensure the emperor's reign stays prosperous.
So it's like this mix. Spiritual devotion, but also loyalty to the emperor, to the Tang dynasty.
Exactly. It's a fascinating blend. You see how religious pilgrimage back then wasn't just personal. It was seen as benefiting the whole kingdom.
Right. The whole realm. Yeah. No wonder the monks were impressed.
Totally. They actually give him this amazing title, Loyal-Hearted, Courageous, Great Dharma Master.
That's quite a title.
It is. There's also that lovely description of time passing, the bamboo sounds at moonset, the rooster crowing at dawn.
Yeah, it adds this sort of quiet, poetic feel to the start of the journey.
And he's praying.
A very formal, very significant moment. He's before the Buddha.
In the main hall, right. Basically laying out his mission.
Yeah.
Find the true scriptures, bring those teachings back east.
Exactly. It's a declaration. And he backs it up with promises for the journey itself.
Like burning incense, bowing to images, respecting pagodas along the way.
Precisely. These aren't just motions he's going through. They're part of his spiritual purpose, grounding him for what's ahead. It sets a tone.
You really feel the weight of it when he says goodbye to the other monks.
You do. The text says they were reluctant, walked with him for 10 miles even.
10 miles. That says a lot about their connection and maybe how dangerous they thought this trip was.
Their worry really highlights the perceived difficulty.
Sanzang heads west again, and the text gives us these nice little descriptions, the autumn scenery changing as he passes through places like Gongzhou and Hezhou.
And what stood out to you about this early part of the travel before things get messy?
Well, it's a consistent respect he gets. Local officials, religious leaders along the way, they all treat him with honor.
Ah.
It really shows the power of that emperor's decree, you know? and how widespread Buddhism was in the Tang Dynasty. He's not just some random guy walking across the country. People recognize his purpose.
So that connection between religious power and political power is really visible.
Definitely. It underscores how intertwined they were.
But things really shift gear after he leaves Hezu.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
This is where the perilous journey part really kicks in, right?
Mm-hmm.
The text talks about this super early departure, like 4 a.m. in autumn. So it's pitch black.
Yeah, you can almost feel that cold, dark morning.
And they're disoriented, traveling in the dark, and then suddenly, boom, disaster. San Zhang, his two followers, who don't even get names, poor guys.
Nope.
And their four horses, they all just fall into a pit.
Just tumble in. Talk about a rough start to the day.
Seriously. But falling in the pit is like the least of their worries almost immediately.
Right. Because what happens next is straight out of a nightmare.
Go on.
This group gets attacked. Suddenly. By 50 or 60 demonic figures. 50 or 60.
Yeah. And they're led by this demon king who sounds absolutely terrifying. The description is wild electric eyes, voice like thunder, teeth like saws, colorful body, steel whiskers, hooked claws.
Whoa.
The text even compares him to like famous monsters from mythology. Just painting this picture of pure horror makes you wonder what fears about the unknown these descriptions tapped into back then.
You can just imagine the pure terror San Zhang and his followers.
Yeah.
They're bound instantly.
Instantly, tied up. Helpless.
Which is when you think, okay, this is the absolute worst it can get.
It gets weirder.
Yeah, this bizarre interruption happens. Two other demons show up.
Uh-huh. The Bear Mountain Lord sounds like a big, black, powerful figure. And someone called Special Envoy, who's described as large and ox-like.
So more demons arrive.
Yeah.
Like a twisted welcoming party.
It's almost like that. And what's so disturbing is how casual they are.
Casual. How?
Well, the Bear Mountain Lord greets the first demon king, they call him General Yin, and congratulates him on his good fortune, meaning the captives.
Wow, that's chilling.
Yeah, and the special envoy chimes in too. They're making small talk, asking how things are going. It's this horrible contrast, you know, this polite chat while San Zhang and his guys are tied up and terrified.
It's almost darkly funny in a really messed up way. Shows zero empathy from these creatures.
None at all. And then it gets truly gruesome.
Okay, brace myself.
The Bear Mountain Lord just casually asks General Yin if, you know, maybe these humans could be dinner for the guests.
Oh, no.
And General Yin is like, great idea. They decide right there to eat San Zhang's two followers.
Just like that.
Just like that. Fast. It's brutal. And San Zhang witnesses this. He's so traumatized, he nearly dies from shock right there.
I can't even imagine. It's such a violent swing from the respect he was shown earlier. Really hammers home how unpredictable and frankly, savage this journey is turning out to be.
Absolutely throws you. The sudden dive into graphic horror, it really stresses the danger San Zhang is facing. It's not just about mountains and rivers. He's in a realm where basic decency, maybe even the laws of nature, just don't seem to apply.
Both real threats and, well, stuff like this.
For sure. But just when it looks like it's curtains for San Zhang too.
Yeah.
As dawn starts breaking, this old man suddenly appears, just shows up, carrying a staff.
An old man. Out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere. And what he does next is, well, it feels like a miracle. He just effortlessly frees San Zhang, unties him.
Just like that. The demons don't stop him.
Apparently not. Then he breathes on San Zhang, revives him, and points out exactly where his horse and his baggage are.
Wow. Talk about a deus ex machina. A literal lifesaver.
And who is this old guy? It's quite the reveal. He's the Western Heaven's Venus, also known as Taibai Jinxing.
Venus, like the planet. Or a deity.
A major deity in Chinese mythology. Often shows up to intervene, give guidance. So him appearing isn't random. It's a celestial being coming specifically to rescue San Zhang.
So divine intervention.
Definitely. Venus even tells him, look, this place, Double Fork Ridge, it's super dangerous, full of tigers and wolves. But he says the demons didn't eat San Zhang because of his pure nature.
So his spiritual virtue offered some protection.
Seems like it. It's this interesting mix, his own purity and this direct divine help.
And Venus leaves him with a message too, right?
Yeah, it's kind of a pep talk, but also a warning. Like, keep going, you'll get more help later, but don't you dare start complaining about how hard it is.
Yeah, bit of tough love from the heavens.
Mm-hmm.
Because even chosen ones have to suck it up sometimes.
Pretty much. So Venus vanishes as quickly as he appeared, and San Zhang is left alone, and probably still terrified, right, in this super dangerous place.
Absolutely. Alone again, but not for long.
Not for long. He has another totally unexpected encounter. This time, it's a human. A hunter named Lubokin.
Lubokin.
And he's got this awesome nickname, Mountain Quelling Tiger.
Ooh, I like that. Mountain Quelling Tiger. Does he look the part?
Totally. The description's great. Leopard skin hat, embroidered jacket, lion belt, deer boots, and these really intense eyes. You get the feeling this guy owns this wilderness.
Definitely sounds like someone you'd want to meet out there rather than, say, more demons.
Right. And San Zhang, he's desperate. He pleads for help.
And Lubu?
He's reassuring. Says, hey, I'm just a local hunter. But what's really cool is how he connects with San Zhang immediately.
How so?
He explains that even the tigers and wolves fear him, but then he emphasizes, hey, we're both from the Tang Empire. We're countrymen.
Ah, establishing that shared identity, yeah. Finding common ground even out there.
Exactly. It really highlights that sense of shared nationality, human connection, even in the middle of nowhere after something so terrifying.
It's a real contrast to the demons, this unexpected kindness.
Totally. And Lu Bukin doesn't just offer help. He invites San Zhang back to his home to rest, recover, promises to escort him later.
Wow. That's incredibly generous.
It's a powerful moment. Shows human compassion cropping up when you least expect it.
And getting to his home isn't exactly uneventful either, is it? There's a tiger.
Oh, yeah. On the way, a tiger attacks them.
Seriously.
More Danes.
But Lubokin, he totally lives up to the nickname, fights it off bravely, kills it with his steel fork, just reinforces that he's this skilled, courageous protector figure.
Mountain quelling tiger, indeed. Okay, so they finally get to Lubokin's place.
Right, this mountain dwelling. San Zhang meets his mother and his wife.
Okay.
And then comes this really interesting turn. The family asks San Zhang if he would perform memorial rites for Lu Bokin's father, who passed away.
Ah, so weaving in cultural practices, respect for ancestors, Buddhist rituals.
Exactly. It shows how important those things were in their lives.
And there's that bit about food, right? A challenge for a hunter family.
Yeah, it's quite sweet, actually.
Yeah.
Providing a vegetarian meal for a Buddhist monk, not their usual thing.
I bet not. But Lubokin's mother makes this huge effort, cleans everything meticulously, prepares special food just for San Zhang. It really shows their respect and genuine hospitality going out of their way for his religious needs.
That's really nice. You can almost picture her carefully washing the pots.
And San Zhang performs the rituals. The text mentions him reciting different scriptures over several days.
Okay.
And this leads to something pretty amazing. The family has a dream.
A shared dream.
Yeah. Lubokin, his mother, his wife, they dream of the deceased father's spirit.
Whoa. What does the spirit say?
He expresses deep gratitude, says San Zhang's prayers have freed him, allowed him to be reborn into a wealthy family somewhere.
Wow. So the rituals worked. According to the dream.
Exactly. And this makes the family incredibly happy, obviously. Their respect and gratitude for San Zhang just skyrockets. It reinforces the belief in the power of his prayers.
So after all that, the rest, the hospitality, the spiritual service, it's time for San Zhang to move on.
Yeah, time to hit the road again. The family is so grateful they try to give him gifts, gold and silver.
But he refuses.
He humbly refuses. Typical monk, just accepts some simple food like dried provisions for the journey.
Right.
And Lubokin himself escorts him, takes him all the way to the Two Boundaries Mountain.
Two Boundaries Mountain. Sounds significant.
It is. It marks the absolute edge of the Tang Dynasty's territory, the border.
Ah, okay. The end of the line for Tang control.
Precisely. And the farewell there is actually quite moving. Lubokin explains he can't go any further.
Why not? After fighting tigers.
He says he can't cross into Tadar territory because the wild animals over there, they don't recognize him. They don't fear him like the ones in Tanglands do.
Interesting. So even his power has limits, geographical limits.
Yeah, it's a subtle reminder of different zones of control, different dangers. So they have this emotional goodbye. You can tell a real bond formed between them in that short, intense time.
A connection forged through danger and kindness.
Exactly. A testament to that human connection.
And then just as they're parting, the story hits us with this massive cliffhanger.
Oh, yeah. It ends abruptly.
Loud shouts suddenly come from the foot of the mountain. Someone yelling,
"My master is coming!
My master is coming!" Just like that, leaving us completely hanging. Who is this master? Who's master? What does it mean for San Zhang?
Talk about a dramatic cutoff. Leaves you desperate to know what happens next.
Totally. So, okay, looking back at this whole first leg of the journey, What are the big takeaways?
Well, several things really jump out. First, San Zeng's sheer determination. It's unwavering, driven by that deep spiritual vow.
Right, his inner resolve.
Then the brutal reality check. This isn't some peaceful pilgrimage. He immediately faces horrific violence, real danger. It shatters any romantic ideas.
Yeah, the demon feast was intense.
And third, these totally unexpected acts of both terror and kindness. From demons, from a god, from a hunter. It shows how unpredictable the path is.
It really is that unpredictability that grabs you, isn't it? Even reading it now, that lightning fast switch from like religious ceremony to demonic horror. Mm. And then these equally sudden rescues from a local guy and, you know, a literal god keeps you totally hooked. It makes you wonder about the bumps in your own road, maybe.
And for you listening, wanting to get the essence quickly but deeply, this chunk of the story is such a powerful, concise example. It shows the kind of challenges, the weird turns that pop up when you're aiming for something big.
Yeah.
We've seen how his faith, the real world dangers, and these surprise encounters all shape these first steps. It really shows you how many different factors are at play in any huge project.
It really does make you think about that mix. Fate, faith, maybe just plain human decency sometimes, helping you overcome stuff that looks impossible.
Mm.
And that final shout at the border, my master is coming. What on earth could that signal for the rest of San Zhang's journey?